We now have a new challenge, perhaps the most monumental in recorded history. The opportunity to investigate a phenomenon that could change our destiny. A look at ourselves, 1,000 years in the future.
We're going to examine and perhaps question some widely held theories of what may have happened to this Earth of ours. We're going to investigate some strange and bizarre events in the present. Unbelievable happenings, as fresh as today's headlines. And more important, perhaps, we're going to take a searching and scientific look into the future. We're reaching more and more out into space. Perhaps, as we may learn, someone, something, somewhere in space is reaching out to us.
Who the visitors are, where they're from, and what they want is unknown.
Bigfoot was attracting national attention and was now rapidly becoming the most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
Many people have seen ghosts and reported incredible experiences from the realm of the spirit world. Who can tell what this young man will see as he falls deep into a trance?
Welcome to After Dark Radio with your host, Brian Alvarez.
How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on After Dark Radio. We're back live February 20th, 2015, here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Very happy to be back after a two-week vacation in Hawaii. And again, back on the air live. And what a show we've got for you tonight. Tons of stuff to talk about. Hopefully I can remember how to do a radio show. I have not done a live show since I got back from Hawaii. It's been 3 weeks now. So if things go wrong tonight, we do the best we can here on the air. A lot of stuff to talk about here this evening. We're going to be joined in about a half hour by the Brian Kendrick. For those of you on the pro wrestling side, you know Brian Kendrick. He's been wrestling since the late 90s. He has wrestled all over the world. He's wrestled in WWE. He's wrestled everywhere. And he is also the conspiracy theorist of pro wrestling. So much so that there are, in fact, videos that you can buy where you can get, in the parlance of pro wrestling, shoot interviews with Brian Kendrick, where he talks about all of his various conspiracy theory ideas. We're going to have him on the show here tonight. We had him on the pro wrestling show a couple of years ago, and on one of the shows, we got to talking about conspiracy theories. What kind of conspiracy theories are we talking about here? Well, Brian Kendrick explained to me at the time that, in his opinion, the sun was actually cold. I'd never heard this before. I'd never even thought of the possibility that the sun might be cold. And so we discussed all of these various conspiracies, and everybody started emailing me, and they said, can you get Brian Kendrick back one of these days to talk conspiracies again? And quite frankly, Brian Kendrick talking conspiracies is a much better fit for this show than it is for the pro wrestling show. And so Brian Kendrick is going to be on the show tonight talking all sorts of various conspiracies. And if you've ever heard him talk about them, it's quite the ride. So he's going to be on the program here tonight. We've also got a lot of news stories we're going to talk about here this evening. And in fact, I have got a story of my own that took place when I went to Hawaii. So that is on the docket. We're going to be taking open line phone calls. The number is 855-478-4478. That is the phone number for open lines here tonight. And I should plug, of course, the website. If you're listening to this and you can't write down the phone number quick enough, fear not. As long as you can remember that this is the After Dark Radio Show, you can easily find the website, which is afterdarkradioshow.com. Everything you need is up there. The phone numbers, once again, toll-free, 855-478-4478. The east and west of the Rockies line, west of the Rockies at 425-488-0525, east of the Rockies at 425-482-1686. All of these numbers are available for you this evening. We'll start taking calls here in just a moment. Also would like to direct you up there because our January 30th show, which is the last show that we did live with Rob Shelsky talking the Hollow Moon Theory, is up there as a free download right now. If you have not had a chance to download that one, I recommend you go up right now if you're listening live on Friday night and download it. Because within about a half hour of the end of this program, this show is going to be up there as a free download. We also have our own free stream, which you can click on up there at afterdarkradioshow.com. The last four or five shows are usually playing on a loop up there on the After Dark Radio Show stream that is available up there as well. Also, the email address, if you'd like to contact me tonight, brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. That's Brian with a Y, afterdarkradioshow.com. The Twitter, @BrianAlvarez. You can head up there and check me out on Twitter. Communicate with me there. I'll read some of those during the program here tonight. And our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow. Down there under guest booking, you can contact producer Garrett. It says, please do not contact producer Garrett, actually. He is on hiatus for the time being. I do believe I got an email from him. I haven't read the entire email yet because I think I got it when I was traveling. But I believe that Garrett is now a proud father. So if you'd like to drop him a line there and wish him a congratulations, you're welcome to do that. His email address is up there. And Andrew Lutsky, who is our Facebook guru, he is the new producer for the show in the absence of producer Garrett. Now, I've not put Andrew's email address up on the website yet. I will do that soon. But it's not a big deal right now because Andrew has me booked up, I think, through about 2020. He has bombarded me with guests. And so we've got so many cool guests coming up on this program. I want to thank Andrew for that very much. And what I'm going to do when I get into the news stories here today is I would like to do something a little different than usual. I usually take news stories from literally all over the internet. And if I do say something interesting, I am going to go and read them from various websites. But this is the After Dark Radio Show on the Dark Matter Radio Network. And so I'm going to make a concerted effort here to take news stories not only from our Facebook page, which Andrew updates every single day, that's facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow, but also the artbell.com website. That is the host website for the Dark Matter Radio Network. And so we're going to be pointing out a lot of articles that are up there right now. So if you are not favoriting on your browser, artbell.com, or the After Dark Radio Show and Facebook page, I do recommend doing that because a lot of the stuff that I'm going to be talking about on the program, you can find on both of those websites. So I want to make mention of that. Once again, head up to the website for any of the information that you need to contact this program. And again, the open line phone calls will begin in just a moment. I did want to make mention of one thing, and that is we are hoping that sometime this summer, Art Bell is going to be returning to the Dark Matter Radio Network right here on this very stream in which you are listening to this program. Now, some things have come up here and there that have made things not quite as easy as all have hoped. One of those being that Art very much wants to use all of his old bumper music. And if you know anything about radio, it is not cheap to use the traditional songs that you would hear on the radio. A lot of the songs that you hear on the Dark Matter Radio Network and on this program in particular are in the public domain. And so these are shows that have been offered by the artists free of royalties, royalty-free music, and so we don't have to pay for those. But, of course, all of the bumper music that Art has used over the years, this is not public domain music. This is music that has to be paid for. And the costs of streaming this music and including these songs in a podcast form afterwards is extremely expensive. And just a quick note to kind of put this into perspective. The wrestling fans will understand this. The rest of you, I will help you understand it by explaining some more of it. WWE is the biggest wrestling organization in the world, and they gross about $500 million a year. They are a publicly traded company, and at the time that I am doing this show, I believe because of the stock price going up, because of the most recent investors call, the company is worth $1.4 billion. This company is doing very, very well. $1.4 billion this company is worth. They gross $500 million a year. Anyway, they have a show every Monday night, Monday Night Raw. And every now and then, they will do a music video. And when they do these music videos, normally they use their own music for wrestlers' entrances, so they don't have to pay royalties. They create their own music, and that's what they use. But every now and then, they'll do a video, and they will use a popular song. And so, long story short, when you watch this video on Monday Night Raw, and you hear this contemporary music that they use for the music video, if in 1 month's time, you go to the WWE Network, and you attempt to watch that same Raw show, because perhaps you think, man, that was such a great video. I loved that video. The music was so perfect for it. You go up to the WWE Network a month later, and guess what? The music is gone, because they've taken it out, because even though they have a value of $1.4 billion, it is too expensive for them to justify the cost of leaving that music in as they air it on the WWE Network. So long story short, everyone here at Dark Matter Radio Network is hoping that Art comes back. I know that the people behind the scenes are working very, very hard on trying to find a solution to this problem. And I just know that from my own perspective, I would love to use contemporary music here on this program and on a lot of the other programs that I do. Virtually everything that I use is public domain for that very reason. And I should note that, in my opinion, if I were the individuals that are responsible for collecting this money, there is a huge difference, in my opinion, between a bumper song, which is 30 seconds of music leading in and out of a commercial break, and going on the air and saying, hey, you want to hear the latest Bruno Mars song? Let me play the whole thing in its entirety, and then on the podcast, you'll have it forever. That's two completely different things. If you're doing a podcast, and you play a song from start to finish, and people can download that podcast, and they have it with them, and anytime they want, they can go on that podcast and listen to the whole song, then yeah, as an artist, I would think, hey, I deserve something for that. You've got a copy of my song, and I feel that I should be paid. However, when you're using a few seconds, maybe 30 seconds of bumper music going in and out of a commercial, it's not even the full song. I remember when I was a kid listening to Art Bell. Do you want to know how many CDs I went out and bought because I heard a song on Art Bell's show or some other radio show, and I thought, my God, I love that song. I'm going to go buy the CD. And I bought a lot of music because of what I had heard in bumpers on radio shows. If somebody wants to take a portion of this program, not the whole program, obviously, but if you want to take a portion of this program and you want to put it out somewhere and you want to put a link back and tell people where they can hear it, all that is free publicity for me. Go to town. So I think that the music industry is making a big mistake here. I think that there are so many podcasts out there that if podcasts had the ability to play even 15 seconds, if you gave a 15-second or a 30-second limit where this is as much as you can play for free, as long as you name the artist and talk about how you can get this song on iTunes or Amazon.com, I think the music business would probably be doing a lot better than this attempt to get people to pay for the bumper music, which I guarantee 99.9% of podcasters are not bothering to do because they can't afford it. I just thought I'd make a little comment about that because I think that they're shooting themselves in the foot. I think that they would be doing a lot better if they allowed a small portion of music with a credit, of course, and even a link to Amazon.com. You know, if you want to use five songs, you can use 30 seconds, and on your website, you've got to have a link to where they can purchase that song on Amazon or iTunes or wherever. I think a lot of people would be doing a lot better than they're doing with their 9 cents or whatever per play that they're trying to get that they're not getting from anybody because nobody's bothering to do this because it's too expensive. Enough from me. Let's go to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Ryan, I haven't heard your voice in weeks.
Yeah, I want to update you on the Brian Ladd situation.
Man, your phone isn't good, so let's do the best we can here.
Okay. The situation is I met with a few people randomly by mistake, pretty much, and weird things happened when I met with these people. The first one was a guy named Warren interpreted my dreams. I showed him the papers.
Hold on 1 second. I hate to do this, Ryan. I know you've been on hold for a long time, but I'm going to ask that you disconnect and call right back because your phone is cutting out very, very badly. And I'm thinking that if you call right back, we'll have a better connection. So let's do that here real quick. I'm going to disconnect you and give me a call back here, and we'll pick you up. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hello, Brian. It's Jason from British Columbia. How are you doing?
Oh, dear. What is with my phone tonight? Jason, what's going on?
Not much. What's going on with you?
Well, everybody who's calling so far has gotten a bad connection, so I don't know if it's my phones or if it's you. My phones were working this afternoon.
Oh, dear.
I'm going to try something, Jason. Jason, I hate to do this. I'm going to disconnect you, and I'm going to pick up Ryan, and I want you to call back in about 5 minutes. We're going to try this again.
Goodbye, Ryan.
All right, thank you very much. All right, Ryan, it's you again.
Yeah, this is not Ryan.
Oh, geez. Well, your phone sounds great, so hey, you're on the air.
Hey, I just wanted to give you an amen on the whole podcasting bumper music thing, you know. I've been waiting to call in today, hearing your last show when you talked about how you had so many guests lined up, and you said it again today. I wonder, you know, there's a rumor that maybe a person could come in and fill in three nights a week at the 10 o'clock hour, 7 o'clock your time hour. You know, we would really love to hear you, I think. A lot of people, not just me, would love to hear.
Oh, you want me to fill in three more days a week?
3 days a week at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Yeah, that would be great. I know you're busy. I know you've got your wrestling show. I know that you're really involved. I'd like to say that it shows, you know, that you've got a lot of experience on the radio.
Well, I would love to do more, but believe it or not, this coming Monday, I've already added more in terms of the wrestling. I've got 5 days, actually, I'm sorry, 6 days a week. I've got Sunday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio and Sports Byline starting Monday. So I don't think I can add any more in the evening, at least not yet.
Well, yeah, I thought you would say something like that. But I love your show, and I have to listen to it on the replay usually, but when I can catch it live, I do, and I wish you guys the best. And I'll be listening.
All right, well, I want to thank you so much for the call. I should add, by the way, that if I did take over and do three or four nights a week here, hopefully that would only last till July anyway, because then Art will return, and he will be doing his 4 or 5 nights a week, so we can cross our fingers for that. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Can you hear me any better?
Your phone sucks. We'll just do our best. What's going on?
Okay.
Okay, there was a guy named Warren. I think that's where we were before I cut you off. Tell me about Warren.
Okay, he's just a buddy of mine, and he interpreted my papers that I showed him, that I showed you. He had different interpretations of what was on the paper, and his interpretations came true then.
He had different interpretations than you had.
Right.
What did he interpret?
He interpreted she is HM, which I thought was Holly McVay. He said that was she is him. So what happened was that night I saw a mall cop. It looked like a 12-year-old boy or a 12-year-old girl. So I think maybe that's where that drawing was hinting at, that maybe that's really a man and not a woman.
Hmm. But the letters were HM and there was no I.
Oh, so you interpreted that as she is HM?
Well, if that's what it said, I don't recall if it was HM or HIM.
Yeah, we had an argument at the bar about it. He said it was him, and I said it was HM.
Man, we need to get Brian. Can't you go back to Brian Ladd and say, can you redo this drawing and fix this HM and make it clear what you're trying to write here?
Every time I try to write to Brian Ladd, it says he's on vacation or he's dealing with a mental illness, it says.
Oh, that's no good. I was going to make a joke about the vacation, but now that you mentioned mental illness, I don't want to say anything. What were the other, you said there was another alternative reading that you got from your buddy. What else did he think was different?
Yeah, the other one was the picture of the woman I thought was my mom, and Warren thought that was a female dog. And then
Hold on a second. There was a drawing that you thought was your mom, and Warren said, that ain't your mom, that's a dog?
Right.
To me, that's fighting words.
I don't know. I didn't tell him. I was just asking him what he saw. I didn't tell him what my interpretation was on this drawing.
Okay, so you saw your mom. He saw a dog. And how do you find this more accurate?
Well, I went to a better bar the night after this, and I wanted a drink. It was, I can't say the name of it because I'll get kicked off, but pretty much it's a female dog drink, and they were out of it.
I see.
And I really wanted to drink it.
The dog and the drink, that makes sense. Now, Ryan, let me ask you one question before I go to this next caller here. Now, it seems that you got a reading and you made some conclusions, and then later your buddy Warren came to some different conclusions, which also matched up. Now, if we wait 6 months and you have another buddy try to look at the drawings and find out what he thinks that they really mean, and then you go out and he's correct. I mean, basically what I'm asking is, how long will these readings be accurate?
I'm not sure. Like, the last time that a reading was correct was during the Super Bowl. Something happened that was right on one of the readings during the Super Bowl that Brian Ladd drew.
Very interesting. Well, Ryan, listen, I want to thank you very much for the call. And amazingly, your phone cleared up right there at the end. So I'm glad that's working. Hopefully, Jason's does as well. This may be Jason on the air. Who is this calling in right now?
No, this is Emmanuel.
Emmanuel, what's going on?
Oh, yes. So I was reading on the internet about this little theory. It's wrestling related. About the Owen Hart's death, because somebody recently posted a picture of, like, of him dying on a sociology book, and
whose death?
Like, Emmanuel Davis?
Emmanuel Davis's death.
No. Owen Hart.
Oh, Owen Hart. Okay, so what's your question now? What about Owen Hart?
Like, they were saying, like, that when he died, like, his death, like, in, it's hard to explain, his death in a vault and, like, watched.
They had it in a vault. Are you saying that there was a theory that they had footage of the fall that they had in a vault?
Yes.
Okay. To the best of my knowledge, and I say this knowing that there was a legal case between Martha Hart, his widow, and WWE. And if there had been footage, I mean, we would have at least heard about it. I don't think we would have seen it. But to the best of my knowledge, there was zero footage of the fall of Owen Hart.
Well, so somebody was saying, like, oh, like, before they was recording, like, the Titantron of, like, what was happening at the promo, and then he fell off and he hit his chest. But before that, they had, like, caught a clip of it before the promo went off. And then after that happened,
Well, yes. I want to thank you very much for the call. What happened was they for those that don't know, there was a WWE pay-per-view, and one of the performers was dressed up as a superhero, and they had him latched onto a harness above the ring, and they had been lowering him down to the ring on the harness. And during a live pay-per-view event, the harness snapped, and he fell, I believe, 78 feet. And he did, in fact, hit his head on the turnbuckle, bounced into the ring, and they took him to the hospital, and he passed away that night. And as many of you are well aware, there was a very, very controversial evening because one of their performers gravely injured, and they made the decision to continue the show. The show must go on, they concluded. And in fact, all of the other wrestlers had to go down to the ring and wrestle in a ring that had blood in the corner from where Owen had fallen 78 feet or so from the ceiling. And the only reason that this didn't end up on videotape is because they had cut all the cameras to film the giant screen in the arena where there was a pre-taped segment airing. And so nobody, I mean, people live in the building saw it, but nobody on TV saw it, and it was, you know, there have been a lot of rumors, obviously, as he's talking about, but no footage of it aired. This was before the big-time cell phone video era, and so obviously if something like that happened today, there would be a million videos of it, but at the time, there were none, to the best of my knowledge. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
This is Ed from Cleveland.
Ed, what's going on?
I was just wondering, I was just trying to think of something weird to call in about. So what's your thoughts on animals seeing, let's say, ghosts or different life forms or something? Like, because my dog just constantly looks out my bedroom door and just stares out there. And I'm like, this is kind of weird.
Well,
do you have anything like that with your cats?
Every now and then, my cats will look at ghosts. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm sure every pet owner has had the experience. I don't know if they're looking at ghosts. The one thing that I know about animals is a lot of them have, I hate to use the word powers, but I can't think of a better word at the moment. A lot of them have powers we do not have, whether that be they can hear frequencies we cannot hear. You know, birds and their internal navigation systems. I mean, it could be something where your dog or your cat, my best theory would be, there is a sound that for whatever reason, they can hear and we cannot. I shouldn't say for whatever reason, it's obvious. It's either too high or too low. The frequency is too high or too low for us to hear. And so they're reacting to that frequency, which they hear and we don't. And so I think that that's the most likely scenario. I don't know what would be making that kind of sound. That is a mystery to me. If anybody knows what makes these super high or low frequency sounds that your animals could tune into, let me know. But that would be my best guess. That as opposed to seeing something, they're hearing something that we don't hear.
That's very probable. I mean, that and logical, too. That's very interesting.
I should mention something since you asked about these animals. I was in Hawaii and we went to a whale symposium where they just kind of, it's 2 days of people coming on stage and talking about their latest research and that sort of thing. And one of these guys was talking about some sounds that he had discovered out of humpback whales. And he was comparing it to elephants, where when you go to the zoo and you go to the elephant exhibit, you will hear the elephants making whatever sounds elephants make. But if you had very, very sensitive audio equipment and you recorded the elephants, you would find that they make a sound that is below 20 hertz, which is lower than the human ear can hear. We're talking way down in the 10, 8 hertz or so. And it's a low rumbling sound like thunder that these elephants make that we don't hear. And so if you brought an animal there that could hear in that range, it's possible that the elephant would be making some crazy noise and your animal would be freaking out and you wouldn't know why.
That sounds totally matches up with everything. Glad that you're back on the airs and on the air, and that's about it. I'll talk to you later.
All right, I want to thank you very much for the call. Before we go any further, I got to talk about my story from Hawaii, which is just, this was crazy. A little backstory, if you're listening to this show for the first time or you haven't been listening for a while. I am a skeptic about most things. If you can prove otherwise, great. But in general, I tend to be a skeptic. And I have always felt that people see something in the air. I don't know if it's an alien spacecraft. I don't know what it is people see in the sky, but there are definitely things that people see in the sky. Maybe 100% of the time, they're weather balloons or swamp gas. I don't know. I don't necessarily, I find it very hard to believe that aliens have visited the Earth, and I find it even more difficult to believe that they came all this way only to crash. But we'll be talking about the Roswell slides later. Now, with that said, I believe that the Patterson-Gimlin film is of something real. I don't know what it is. I've watched it a million times. I've seen a million different people try to break it down. And I don't think it's a man in a suit. I have never in my life ever seen any man in any suit in the biggest Hollywood blockbusters that looks anything like what is in the Patterson-Gimlin film. That's pretty much the extent of the things that I believe. I have never believed in ghosts. I have never believed in ghosts. And a few weeks ago, we did a live ghost hunt. Live to tape would be a better way to describe it. Went to the dojo that I used to train at that is allegedly haunted. And we had a very, very interesting night. We had EMF readings ridiculously high, up above 30. I think one of them was in the 40 range for a wooden door, which later when we returned to the wooden door, we got an absolute zero. I have no idea why it was so high. There is no explanation for it. The reading was high with the power on. The reading was high with the power off. And then the reading later was back to normal with the power on and the power off. No explanation for this. Also, the door that was giving this reading, we were filming it. My buddy Tina and I and her husband Jack, we were filming and taking photos of this door. And as we're looking through her cell phone and take this photo, an orb shot up the stairs towards us. It was the craziest thing that I have seen maybe ever in terms of the paranormal. So I still don't know what it is. I still don't know if I necessarily believe in ghosts, but it was very, very strange. And it really made me think. So with all that said, went on vacation to Hawaii, and we stayed for 3 days in Hana, which is on the other side of, if you go to Maui, one side of the island is all of the hotels. We were in Lahaina for most of the time, Napili. But we spent 3 days in Hana because it's absolutely beautiful there. It is paradise, quite frankly. And it's small. It's a very, very small. It is not the craziness of the other side of the island. It's very, very peaceful. So we stayed in Hana. And on the last night, we went to a pizza place with my buddy Clayton. And it's not even a pizza place, really. There's a place on the side of the road where they sell a banana bread. And every couple Friday nights or something, I don't know what the schedule is, but they do clay oven pizza. And they've got a giant clay oven, and they'll make this amazing pizza. So we went there, and we were eating the pizza. And we had to drive maybe 10 minutes back into town on all of these windy roads to get back to our hotel. And so my wife and I are in the rental car, and we're on the road, and it's very, very dark, and we've got our headlights on, and the road is very, very windy. And we're driving down the road, and all of a sudden, both of us at the same time went, whoa, 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 because there was a biker in the road in front of us. Someone on a bicycle in the middle of the night in Hana, Hawaii, on a very, very windy road. This did not seem like a bright idea. So we both said at the same time, whoa, whoa, slow down. And she slowed down and the biker was gone. And we drove and we looked both ways. There was nowhere for this biker to go. There was, I mean, literally, there's no shoulder. It's a windy road, and there's woods on both sides. There was nowhere for this biker to go. And we were both just, my wife, trust me, you think I'm a skeptic? We're talking a real skeptic here in my wife. And our minds were blown. She, I mean, we've talked about it, but, I mean, we haven't really talked about it in the sense that, I'm not going to grill her about it, but I keep asking her, you saw that, right? We both saw that. That was a bicyclist. And she's like, yeah. And he disappeared. And she's like, yeah, it was the craziest thing. And I don't know what happened. I've never had anything like this happen before. We both saw it. It was absolutely a biker, right? And he wasn't even on the shoulder. He was in the middle of the road, and then he was gone. And so, of course, I went back, and I was just completely perplexed. And I emailed Clayton, or I texted him, and I just told him we saw a ghost biker. I had no other way to describe it. And he laughed at it, and I told him what happened, and he said, well, you know, around here, everybody believes there are spirits everywhere. I don't remember his exact words, but something of that nature. And of course, then I went and I tried to Google like Hana Highway ghosts, and there's all sorts of stories that you can hear about it, but it was crazy. I mean, it would be one thing if I saw something or she saw something and the other didn't see it, and maybe it was, who knows what it was, but there were like no other cars on the road. It was not somebody else's headlights. It was, I mean, we were the only ones on the road at the moment, and we both saw the biker at the same time. We both said slow down, and the biker's gone, and there was nowhere for him to go. It was crazy. So I don't know what's going on now, but in the course of a month, I've had two really weird experiences that I can't explain, and I don't really want to believe, but it was certainly amazing. That was more amazing than the stuff that we discovered down at the dojo. I mean, it was just like mind-blowing. To the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from? Hello?
Can you hear me?
There we go. What's going on?
Hey there. I have a pretty simple question. And this one might be a little bit wrestling-related. I don't know if you're interested in that. What do you think about the old WCW being lowballed really heavily and the conspiracy theory that Vince had put somebody on the inside and all that nonsense and all that stuff?
Well, it's certainly a conspiracy theory, so I guess it does tie into this show. For those of you unaware, I wrote a book, Death of WCW. It's available at Amazon.com. If you want to know everything that happened with WCW and why it died, it's all in that book. There have been a lot of conspiracy theories. There certainly are some weird things that happened, at least to a degree. But really, at the end of the day, I mean, they just screwed themselves up. I mean, there were so many things that WCW did that led to them going out of business. And whoever got sold to at the end, I mean, you can come up with conspiracy theories about why it got sold to WWE and whether there was ever any consideration to even sell it to anybody else. And I mean, there are things that you can discuss from that perspective, but at the end of the day, it was just horrible, horrible business in every conceivable sense of the word. If you don't even like wrestling, everybody, you should read this book just to find out how not to run a business. I mean, they screwed themselves, is the easiest way to put it.
All right. That's pretty much the answer I was expecting and looking for. Thanks.
All right. I want to thank you very much for the call. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from? Hello there. I hung up. All right, everybody, that's enough of the phone calls anyway. It is time to go to our interview. We're going to be joined here in a moment by Brian Kendrick. The pro wrestling tie-in continues, although we're going to talk 90% about conspiracies here on this program here tonight. A very eccentric individual, this Brian Kendrick, so enjoy. And when we return, I've got a lot of stuff to talk about here on this program, including a lot of thoughts on the Roswell slides. Perhaps you have heard about them. If not, you will hear about them on this show in about 45 minutes. So stand by, everybody. We're going to be back in just a moment with Brian Kendrick here on After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Broadcasting Network. We're back here on After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here, After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Radio Network. And we are very happy today to be joined by Brian Kendrick, very much requested guest from the wrestling side, but he's got a lot of non-wrestling things to talk about here today. And Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing really good, Brian. Thanks for having me.
I remember a couple of years ago we had you on the show, and I don't even know how we got into talking about it, but we got into talking about conspiracy theories and all sorts of weird stuff. And ever since then, people have been asking for you to come back on the show, so today is their lucky day. But before we talk all of that stuff, since we do have a lot of listeners from the wrestling side, I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about that. And for all of the listeners who don't know anything about wrestling, just some general questions about professional wrestling, since it may interest some people. First off, I know you were down at the WWE Training Center a while ago. How did that go?
I was down there just about a week ago. I was down there last week, and then I was down there for a full week, about 6 weeks ago. And it's a great facility, both their training center and where they film at. And yeah, I don't know what to say. It's top notch.
Now, for those that don't know a lot about pro wrestling and only know names like Hulk Hogan and the big stars of the 80s, you've been in wrestling for, 15 years now? When did you first start in pro wrestling?
Yeah, it's about right, about 15 years, yeah.
About 15 years. And for those that are unaware, the wrestling business has changed a lot. If you're somebody who watched it a lot in the 80s, where there were all of these giants running around, Brian is not a giant. In fact, he's, I'd say, probably, 5'10 or so, in around one.
Oh, no, yeah. I mean 5'9", maybe, 5'8", 5'9".
5'8", 5'9".
Yeah.
And what possessed you to get into pro wrestling?
I don't know, just something about it really excited me. You know, I saw it at WrestleMania 6, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, two very well-known wrestlers, obviously, in the world of wrestling. Watched their match, and it was larger than life, and I decided about 10 years old or so that's what I would like to do if I could do anything.
And there was never that moment where you thought, I got to be a giant to do this. I mean, I'm too small. That never entered your mind.
No, not that it would be impossible. No. What really helped was Rey Mysterio. Seeing Rey Mysterio break onto the scene in WCW, he was real inspiring. I believe he was billed at like 5'3". He was in great shape. He does amazing stuff, but he opened up the doors for anybody.
Now, when I first started doing this show, I was shocked at the number of people on the wrestling side that loved this show. There was a big crossover between people who were interested in sort of fringe topics and also pro wrestling. And as we start moving into some of the more fringe topics here on this show, when did you first get interested in this kind of thing? I mean, was there a particular topic when you were younger that maybe you read a book on it or you saw something on the television? When did you first get interested in these topics?
Oh, I mean, if you're talking as far as like cryptozoological, that type, or if you're talking about as far as conspiracies, I've always liked all things bizarre or imaginary, or, Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster. I mean, I've always entertained the idea that maybe they exist. I doubt it. But I never wanted to kill the idea that they existed. So that's always been with me. As far as conspiracies goes, it was an episode of South Park when they were talking about 9/11 that was the first time I ever started questioning anything.
So we're going to talk a lot about different conspiracies here today. And sometimes you hear people that are into conspiracy theories and they believe virtually everything, and that runs the gamut. We're talking Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, UFOs, ghosts, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, you pretty much said that you don't think that there is a Loch Ness Monster. What about Bigfoot?
Yeah, okay, so, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, here's what I think it boils down to, Brian. I think everything's mental, right? So Bigfoot does and doesn't exist, just depending on who's observing it. But therefore, it does exist. Everything exists, just not in everybody's universe, their reality. To me, it seems sketchy. So it's kind of on the fringe of my reality. But I'm not saying it does or doesn't exist. I'm saying everything does exist. Just depends on who's observing.
So are we essentially talking the mini worlds theory, and that we each live in our own world and we each see reality in a different way?
Yeah. I mean, we're all fragments of one world. Yeah, in a manner of speaking, we're all individual worlds, but it's all individual experiences of the one giant is. So what we are is just the one thing experiencing itself. So there'll be a Loch Ness Monster, there won't be. It's all just perspectives.
So let's start with some of these. It's interesting because when I asked you some of the things you wanted to talk about, you mentioned the Hollow Earth. And the last show we did here, I had a guest on who wrote a book about the Hollow Moon. And he was not convinced that the Earth was hollow, but he was pretty much convinced that the moon was hollow. And I had heard the Hollow Earth theory, obviously, for a long time, and I didn't know a lot about the Hollow Moon. But he had what he felt was very good evidence for a hollow moon. Before we get into the Earth, your thoughts on the theory that the moon might be hollow?
Sure, yeah. I mean, what they said they've done, ping tests by shooting sound off of it and hearing how it echoes. And, I've heard stuff about it being hollow. It makes just as much sense to me as it not being hollow.
So the Hollow Earth theory, obviously, is the theory that the Earth is hollow. Are we talking the Earth is completely, there's nothing in there? Are we just talking like tons of underground caves and such? What does it mean when you say that the Earth is hollow?
Okay, so there's the Hollow Earth theory with Admiral Byrd. I believe he's the one that was famous for writing the journal and flying into both the North and South Poles. So that's the idea that the Earth is the way we picture it with a globe, with there being openings, at the North and South Poles. You can go into it, there's all sorts of stuff inside. What I'm more fascinated by is the idea of, I hope it's the right term, concave Earth. So if you took the globe and put the skin inside out, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
So the Earth is actually, what we're experiencing is inside of the Earth currently.
So we're talking, if you could somehow just turn the entire Earth inside out. So we are living on the surface, but we're living on the inside surface of the Earth.
Bingo. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that's any realer than anything else. I don't think it's any less real. To me, it's just one of the most fascinating theories to look up stuff on, because if that's the case, how mind-blowing, or how flexible is reality if you can find evidence that the Earth is round and flat and inside out and hollow and all of the above.
So I've never been outside the Earth, but people tell me the Earth is round, and so my only proof, so to speak, for myself, having not been outside the Earth, is that if I go to, I was just in Hawaii, and so you can look at the curve of the Earth when you look out to the ocean. And if there's an eclipse, you can see the shadow of the Earth on the moon, which is round. So what sort of evidence is there that we live in a concave Earth, I guess?
All right, so I know, if you look into it, there was a society that was built in Florida that ran all sorts of tests trying to show that the Earth actually curves the other way around. Now, they had their sticks and strings and rulers to test it all. And according to them, they have evidence for it. There's this YouTube filmmaker, Stephen Crist, and he's got hours of stuff on it. And again, I'm not saying it's real at all. I don't believe in anything. I don't believe it's round or flat. I mean, it just is what it is. But to me, that's something that I take for granted, like the Earth just being round the way we were taught, and seeing that there's theories outside of that is exciting to me.
Now, if we do live in a concave Earth, we were just talking about the hollow moon. What are we seeing when we look up? I mean, is the moon inside the Earth? I mean, is this concave Earth much bigger than we would presume the Earth would be?
No, what it is outer space would be much, much smaller than we imagine it to be. So it's like a glass ball that's holding all of this outer space, right? So imagine outer space is like a yolk inside of an egg. And that yolk starts, I think it's like 78 miles above sea level in this theory. And so we're just I think maybe the yolk is spinning around inside of the egg, I think is the way it works. But it's just like a glass ball, almost like a snow globe, in place of the yolk.
So when we on Earth look up and we see the changing of the constellations, as opposed to that stuff going, as opposed to the Earth turning, our Earth is staying steady, and that yolk inside, which is the heavens, that is what is spinning around.
In theory, I think so, yeah. Yeah.
So the sun, how does that fit into the concave Earth theory? Is that also much smaller than we presume it to be?
I mean, I guess in theory, everything would have to fit inside this yolk. I don't know if there's like a cubicle divider between night and day. That doesn't seem plausible, but none of it does. But if you'd imagine that all that we see that's, you know, up at that 78 miles and above is all going to be in this glass ball.
So obviously, if the Earth is concave, we have to presume that a lot of this stuff that we have been told, for example, the moon landing, I mean, we would have to presume that has to be hoaxed, because otherwise, you know, we would know that we live in a concave Earth. So what are your thoughts on the moon landing?
Oh, I mean, yeah, again, it's all things, but really, yeah, I guess for me, it seems not real. It doesn't add up to me. And why are we continuing to go there currently? It doesn't add up. So the idea that it was shot on Kubrick's soundstage seems perfectly plausible to me.
So when you mention Kubrick, I don't know if that ties into the Saturn conspiracy that you wanted to talk about. I don't actually know a lot about the Saturn conspiracy, but I was looking around before the show, and Kubrick's name came up, and I don't know if that's in reference to what you're talking about or other Saturn-related conspiracy theories, but kind of give everybody an introduction to the conspiracy theories involving Saturn.
Oh, boy, okay, so there's tons of stuff on this, too. So it's kind of the idea that these, at the tops of some of these religions, what they're really worshiping is Saturn, which is this god of, if I'm not mistaken, of time and physical matter. So when you look at Saturn, it spins. It's this gaseous planet. Except when you look at the poles, there's a hexagram that's blacked out at the pole, which would be like a black cube turned on its side. Same shape that is inside the center of the star David. The same as like what would be the black cube in Mecca that they're spiraling around, much the same as the gas that spirals around the black cube in Saturn. But the idea is that all this stuff all ties in together. It somehow is really Saturn worship. I'm not saying any of it's real. I'm saying I think somebody out there believes it and is doing this stuff, though. I believe there are people worshiping Saturn.
I should note, by the way, that if you head up to Google and you type in Saturn hexagon and go to the images, you can see that there is, in fact, a hexagon on the pole of Saturn. And it's weird. It's definitely peculiar.
Yeah, it's bizarre, and if you watch, they said if you get bored of watching Seinfeld reruns, pop on the Saturn time cube or Saturn worship, even Saturn worship, and you can find all sorts of stuff on it. It's really interesting. Because it uses all these things you've heard of before, all these major religions. You've obviously heard of a planet. Now you hear about these religions are really worshiping a planet. Again, who knows how much of it's hogwash, but I've already seen all the episodes of Seinfeld. So
that's right. Now, tell me about this time cube. What does that mean, the Saturn hexagon time cube?
So, yeah, so that would be the idea that Saturn is like the god of time. And so, if I'm not mistaken, through being able to have the time and moving forward, then the matter is created through this. Maybe. So you have Saturn, which is also Kronos, which is like the old man eating the baby. If you look at the old paintings and stuff of it, this old, I believe, Greek god. So the idea is there's this black cube that would be inside of Saturn, maybe, much like the black cube, the Kaaba in Mecca. It's just this weird black cube, almost like in Kubrick's Space Odyssey, how there's just like this black...
The monolith.
Yeah, the monolith. And so the way I look at the monolith is that the monolith, everything is this reality is just going, right? And so here comes the monolith, which is like the new version of Windows for reality. And so now all of a sudden... The apes start using tools. You find another monolith when they've used their tools up to certain points. They find another monolith buried on the moon. Now they get another advancement. Then they find another one out in Saturn, out in outer space, and they're zipping all over the place. So I think it's like the time computer program. This monolith is a program that was set here, or Saturn is this computer program that moves time forward.
So we would have to presume that if this is the case, that at some point in our history, I guess either primitive man would have had some sort of advanced technology to see this from Earth, or they would have had to have left Earth to check this out on Saturn.
So if you look up stuff on Saturn being the second sun, They say apparently, I don't know how long ago, but within written history, that there was a sun that was like a second sun that was much closer than it is today, and that was Saturn. So the Earth had what would be an equivalent to like two suns, that other one being Saturn. I don't know how or what would have had to have moved or shifted for that to no longer be the case. But there's stuff on that out there.
You know, it's interesting you mention that, because when I talked to our guest a couple of weeks ago about the hollow moon theory, he was talking about how if you look at a lot of ancient texts, there are a number of them who talk about a time before the moon. He said you can go through all sorts of these, and they talk about, you know, this happened before the moon was in the sky. And he said it's very, very strange that it's not just like one text. There's a number of them that mention this supposed time before the moon. So, I mean, if you tie these together, I mean, perhaps there was a time where things in the sky were different than they are today.
I would imagine, yeah. I mean, I believe there had to have been, even if we're to believe how they say the moon was created with this whole double whack, then that still means it was a chunk of Earth, if I'm not mistaken, at some point. So, yeah, it had to have been different at some point, even by that theory. As far as the moon goes, I like to entertain the theory of it being a hollowed-out space station flown to Earth, because it's... the funnest to believe, and no more far-fetched than the double whack theory.
Well, that was the theory that he talked about, that the moon is hollow and there's somebody inside it. By the way, if you go and look at these pictures of the hexagon on Saturn, there is one of these pictures that shows the Earth next to it, a scale model, I guess, of the Earth. Well, not scale model, obviously, but suffice to say, the hexagon is larger than the Earth. That's huge. I mean, even if we presume that's some sort of natural phenomena, that's gigantic to be larger than the Earth. Now, years ago when you were on the show, you brought up another theory that I'd actually never heard before, But the theory that the sun is actually cold.
Sure. Yeah.
I've never heard this one before, but you had a lot to say about it. So I guess for new listeners, I mean, I presume the sun is hot because I go outside in the sun and it's warm. But there is a theory that the sun is, in fact, cold. Tell us about that theory.
Yeah, so the idea is that it's the photons interacting with mass that create the heat. The photon itself doesn't have any heat. So it's when these photons create this friction, create this energy, that's what creates the heat. So that's why when there's like a flatter surface, like a desert, it's that flat area to create this friction on. In theory, you know, it's same as why there'd be snow up on mountaintops, or why you would freeze to death while in outer space. Again, all in theory, if you're going towards the sun, at what point does it start getting hotter than it was on Earth when you're in outer space, if you're only getting closer to the sun? So yeah, it's just a matter of semantics. Of course, the sun is creating this heat, but it's the interaction of the photons creating the energy that actually creates the heat.
Now, a lot of this that we've talked about here today, you've gone back to this whole concept of reality. And if you've studied quantum physics, you know that there are a lot of theories that perhaps reality is not what we conclude it to be. And I guess we should go back to that right now because, I mean, many of the things that I've asked you about, you've stated, well, in my reality, et cetera, in your reality, et cetera, et cetera. So tell us a little bit more about this, your feelings on what reality is.
Okay, so, I mean, I think it's all, there's no separation, it's mass amnesia. Into creating this separation so we can have experience. So everything is one thing, but for it to have experience, it can't realize that it's what it's looking at, because then it's just itself and it's not an experience. So everything is under self-induced amnesia to experience itself, but it's just one thing having all sorts of experiences in one mass experience. I know it just sounds like a bunch of jibber jabber, but it's everything forgetting it's one thing, experiencing itself, so it can have fresh experiences. So it's just everything playing with itself.
So I guess the question to explain it to people is, so, me, right now, I am interviewing you. So would the theory be that there is no Brian Kendrick, there is no listening audience, there is no anything. I am experiencing everything, and you and everything else that I'm experiencing right now is not real.
It's all real.
For me.
Yeah, it's all real in a sense. It all exists, but the idea that you are separate from the audience, or separate from the microphone, or separate from the telephone I'm talking into, or the couch I'm sitting on, the idea that these things are separate is the falsehood. It's everything you see and are currently experiencing is what you are. So all the spaces in between are all also stem from that original reality, which just separated itself through amnesia. So the listening audience, yourself, myself, everything, these ideas, selves, exist. The idea of a separate self exists solely so we can have experience. So you could say this guy's full of shit, or this guy makes some sense, or I don't like this guy's voice, or whatever it is. So you can have the individual experience.
So you and I are both real in a sense, and also not in a sense.
Yeah, we're really real. Everything's really real. It's just that if you think you're separate from everything around you, that's the mistake.
So this goes back to many, many different religions and such that say we are all one, essentially.
Yeah, that's it. You're all part of the all. There's one giant all, and we're all within the all. We're all part of the all, but we're not the entirety of it. We're part of the entirety. We're all one thing, and our own separate parts of that one thing, but we're not the one entire thing.
So how does death fit into all of this? If I pass away, what happens to me?
So, I mean, I guess you'd have to imagine you go back to the same place from where you came from before you were born. So who knows? The guff, you know. I would imagine you would go on experiencing something in some fashion. Maybe you'd go through a realization of what everything was, how you just experienced yourself, what you got out of that, and then you'd fall asleep again from that experience and wake afresh experiencing something completely different. Or maybe the same damn life all over again, because there's no such thing as free will. And we're just experiencing time, and so this conversation's always happened. We're just experiencing it.
So everything in nature appears to move in a cycle. So essentially what you're saying is that life and death is just another cycle. You cycle through life, and then you start all over again. And whether you get a new shot, or you live a different life, or you live the whole life over again, it's just one continuous circle.
Yeah, either way, it's a continuous circle, yeah. Yeah, it's either if you move forward, you know, if you die in 60 years, if you move forward in 61 years, or if you move forward 300 years ago, or if you move forward back to the day you were born in this life form and have to do it all over again, I don't know, but whatever it is, it just keeps swaying back and forth.
Kind of, I guess, moving back into pro wrestling a little bit here, you have worked for Gabe Sapolsky. And he told me, and I don't know, I cannot remember what building this is, but he insisted to me that there was a building that they ran that was haunted. Did he ever talk to you about this?
I know I've wrestled in buildings where people said that they've been haunted. I don't remember if it was a Ring of Honor show specifically that's happened to me, but I know I've wrestled in haunted buildings before.
So have you ever had an experience in any of these buildings, or have you just heard the stories?
I've just heard the stories. I've went looking, you know, with friends here. Oh, there, you know, something happens down in this basement. So you find some friends and let's go look in the basement. And I jump real easy anyway, so I'm excited to see something. I'm really anxious to see something, but I never have.
Never have.
Nah.
Not in your reality, or just it doesn't happen?
Hasn't happened yet. I'd love to see one. Boy, oh boy, that's life-changing. You definitely live in a world with ghosts.
You have obviously worked with a lot of different wrestlers, and I guess since I mentioned the connection earlier, are there a lot of guys in wrestling that, I mean, obviously, if you watch MMA, you know Joe Rogan has got all of his various theories. Is there a lot of this in wrestling, or when you talk to people about this, do they look at you like, oh, here's Kendrick again?
With theories on stuff?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, no, I think, it's hard for me to say because I don't live outside the wrestling world, so I can't compare the two. You know, I don't work at an office and then work at wrestling and have the two different lives to compare them. But it seems to me that there's a lot of wrestlers who are into the same sort of stuff. Wrestling's a weird lifestyle. The odds of making it big are slim, and I think even slimmer than people realize. There's only a handful of guys that make really fantastic money. There's other guys who get to make a nice living out of it, and that's about it. and you play fight, and it's, but there's an art to it that not most people realize. And so anyways, it takes an eccentric height to be a wrestler anyways, so they're typically into this stuff.
I went to a magic show, of all things, about a week ago, and it was just amazing to watch this guy. He was performing. I mean, he was a carny. It was so much like wrestling. And I don't even really know how wrestling is nowadays. I know how it was like in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I guess the question to you, having been around for quite a while now, is have you seen the brotherhood, so to speak, of wrestling really change in the last 15 years? I mean, how can you compare what it was like to be a worker in the late 90s as compared to like all the kids you see at the WWE Performance Center today?
It's a different animal now. I mean, the Performance Center today, they've got some of the absolute top indie wrestlers, you know, that they could pick up, you know, international guys too. Fergal Devitt, Kenta, you know, Generico, Steen, Callahan, Samurai Del Sol. You know, and then besides those top tier guys, they've got athletes, like freakish athletes, collegiate wrestlers or female bikini models or college football players. So it's like a really well-oiled machine. Whereas before, when I was in the training, It was still kind of carny. You know, we were running bar shows, and goofy towns and doing silly gimmicks, and it's way different. But everything's different.
Is it better or worse?
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, I miss the old days. You know, I'm 35, and you know, I was one of the last generation to use a map. You know, I started on the road using maps. Now people use their phones to find out how to get from place to place. And now people have their Twitter and stuff like this that's just foreign to me. You know, I could be a curmudgeon and say, you know, music was better when I was a kid, but it just is what it is. I think they've got a great thing going as far as wrestling goes. I think the future's bright for wrestling.
Were you one of those guys who, I mean, did you have a phone, like a cell phone early on? Were you one of those guys that the older wrestlers, they couldn't understand these cell phones, they didn't want a cell phone, they didn't want to get any internet, and you sort of laughed at these people, and now all of a sudden you're that old guy, and you don't want to use all this new technology?
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit I did have a cell phone when they first came out. I mean, like Brick Breaker, I think could have been as much of a game as you could get on your phone, you know?
Which was the size of a brick, by the way, these phones.
Yeah, they were. But I had one pretty early in wrestling, just in case. And it did come in handy. And I'm sure, you know, all the new technology, people are using it because it comes in handy. It's not any less convenient, you know, but I guess we all get old at some point, so I guess I got old a few years ago.
So one last thing here that kind of ties back into what we're talking about and the nature of reality. I mean, does it seem to you that with all of these devices and everybody's always on their phone and everybody's texting and you know, there are a lot of younger people that their main mode of communication is not even talking anymore. It is being on their device. It is texting. I mean, do you feel that whether reality is as you think it is or not, one way or the other, we are moving further away from reality into whatever this virtual reality is? How far is this going to go?
Yeah, I mean, it could go as far as everything becoming, you know, one thing in some case, you know, where everything becomes attached, like the singularity. You know, and I think it's gonna come at the cost of a soul, in the sense of I don't know, really deeply feeling things. I have to imagine, just from my own experiences of like playing video games for hours as a kid, I just turned into a zombie. But if your whole life is around talking to your thumbs on a screen, there's got to be parts of you that atrophy because of that.
Now, before we go, let's do a little bit of talking about where you're going to be. For those that, especially on the wrestling side, that want to see Brian Kendrick perform, any upcoming dates that you'd like to talk about?
Oh, man. I mean, I got a few local ones coming up. I know I got the Joey Chaos next week. he's a great guy. I mean, anyways, I love this stuff. And my favorite show to actually be a part of is a show called Hood Slam. They run every first Friday of the month in Oakland. And it's just chaos. I don't know if you've seen it before, Brian, but it's a really wild adult-only show. So if you get a chance to check out Hood Slam, I would take it.
Hood Slam. And any Twitter, Facebook, anything like that?
Sure. It's all BK School of PW. So that's my Twitter and Facebook. And for my wrestling school, and BrianKendrick.net for my wrestling school information as well. That's about it.
How's the school going?
It's going well. It's going well. It keeps me busy, keeps me motivated. I really enjoy it. It keeps me happy.
So there you go, everybody. BK School of PW is a place to go pretty much everywhere if you want to follow Brian Kendrick. And Brian, I want to thank you so much for doing the show today, and hopefully we can get you back on soon.
I'd like that. Thanks for having me back.
And thanks, of course, everybody, for listening. Back in just a moment with more After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Broadcasting Network. And we are back here on After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here, live on Saturday morning, February 21, here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. The Brian Kendrick, everybody, talking all of the latest conspiracy theories. And of course, if you want to join the conversation here tonight, you are welcome to do so. A lot of ways to do it. All of them up at the website afterdarkradioshow.com, which you can check out right now for the latest. 855-478-4478 is the phone number. West of the Rockies, 425-488-0525. East of the Rockies, 425-482-1686. Drop us a line here this evening and let us know what is on your mind. Got a call from Jason in British Columbia who had a terrible phone connection, and I asked him to call me back and he didn't. And hopefully he is listening right now and will give us a call back, because he sent me a number of disturbing tweets here. This, for example: Brian, did you ever get canned water? The end is near. EMP attack, he says. Power off 10 plus years. Canned water, Brian, he says. And also here, he wanted to know if Kendrick had any canned water, and if I had any jerky and or firearms. The EMP is coming, he says. So, Jason, if you are listening right now, you're welcome to give me a call and tell me more about how the end is near. A lot of emails as well. Drop me a line if you so desire. Brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. Just going to go through the mailbag here. A couple of things. This actually was from a few weeks ago, in fact, from Mac. Just a couple of things, he says. Firstly, I wanted to say how much I enjoyed the live ghost hunt, even though I didn't listen live, he said. It kept me absolutely gripped throughout, and I like how you were willing to debunk yourself in the following episode regarding the 3-second audio. Secondly, I think you're building mail, so have been a Freemason lodge. The Odd Fellows are just a club, really. They do not have initiation, certainly not involving candles and skeletons. The Freemasons, however, do. So I don't know if that's another angle worth investigating. Or perhaps someone was simply getting the Oddfellows and the Freemasons mixed up, and the skeleton story belongs to another building entirely. Anyway, I thought you'd like to know, as I know you're a stickler for accuracy. And if I'm a stickler for anything, everybody, it is accuracy. That is from Mac. I want to thank you very much for that email. A couple of others here that came in over the last half hour. Marcus here says, Brian, there is a great National Geographic documentary called Evacuate Earth that portrays the hypothetical scenario of humans evacuating the planet Earth before it is destroyed by a rogue neutron star. The documentary details the technical and social complications of building a generation ship to save humanity and other Earth organisms by relocating to a planet in another solar system. It is a very well-done documentary, and you should watch it and maybe review it on a future edition of After Dark Radio. I will leave you the link. He says he loves the show. Thank you. Apparently this is available on YouTube. It is called Evacuate Earth by National Geographic. Check that out, and maybe we'll talk about it here on a future program. Edward here says, I definitely believe in aliens. However, I do not believe in any alien videos caught by people's cameras. I mean, they could be true or not, but with today's technology, I refuse to believe in any of them. With that said, I think if aliens would want something from us, they would have come and destroyed humanity a long time ago and just taken it from us. Who knows? And aliens look at us. They may look at us like a bunch of ants and dumb monkeys who are destroying ourselves with war, corruption, sickness, etc., and they don't feel we're worth the trouble. Two last things for you, Brian. One, if a UFO came to your house and they asked you if you want to take a ride with them and learn more about the history of the universe, would you go with them at the risk of never coming back? That's a heck of a question. I certainly would not want to leave my wife, my cats, my shows, my dojo. I don't know. It certainly would be quite the opportunity, but I don't know if I'd take that ride. It's a very good question. And secondly, have you ever studied black holes and how they could possibly destroy Earth alongside other planets? Absolutely could. I don't think we're in any imminent danger of being swallowed by a black hole, but I guess certainly anything is possible. I guess there are sometimes small rogue black holes that can move through a solar system. I don't know a lot about it. I'm not a scientist. I only know what I have read. But I don't think there's any imminent danger of us falling into a black hole. I mean, more likely, the sun is going to eventually expand and engulf us before we will be eaten by a black hole. So that would be my guess there. If you want to drop us an email, Brian@AfterDarkRadioShow.com is the email, and I will read any that come in here this evening. Should note also that Chris here says he is a recent F4W Online subscriber and a longtime coast-to-coast fan checking out After Dark for the first time. What are you and this guy talking about, these drawings? Sounds like delusional nonsense, he said, but I'm still curious. Well, if you're a subscriber, then you have the full access to all of our archives, and you can go in and listen to all of the recent After Dark radio shows. And if you go back maybe 5-6 weeks, you can follow the saga of Ryan from Cumberland and Brian Ladd, and you'll have everything that you need to know about this entire story if you head up there and check out those back episodes. By the way, one last quick thing before we go to the news stories today, as well as the Roswell slides, since I do want to talk about those. If you are here from the wrestling side, I'm not sure if you're aware, but if you're not a subscriber, for the next 4 days, we are running a WrestleMania special, which means you can get one full month of all-access subscriber material at f4wonline.com, wrestlingobserver.com, for only $3.99. The usual monthly price is $10.99. If you want to sample it out for a month, $3.99, full access to everything, and that includes every show that we have ever done dating back to 2005, and I believe there's over 100 episodes of After Dark Radio in our archive, so if you're a big fan of this program. You can sign up for just $3.99 at WrestlingObserver.com. You will get a full month of unlimited access to our entire library, and that includes, as noted, over 100 episodes of After Dark Radio, and in actuality, 6,000 radio shows covering pro wrestling as well, available in the archives. No better value if you're a wrestling fan, so go sign up today. Back to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian. My name is Jackie, and I'm from Minnesota.
What's up, Jackie?
I have a question for you regarding aliens. A while back, I was at this party, and there was this hippie-ish girl, and she's very attractive, which is a plus. So I was talking to her, and she said, the reason we have not destroyed ourselves with nuclear weapons is because aliens keep interfering and changing time back. And I told my friend later, I said, dude, that girl was fucking weird. And he said, no, man, I totally understand what she was saying. So I was like, okay, well, now there's a second person with that opinion. So what do you think?
So her theory is, I guess, that every time we come close to destroying ourselves with nuclear weapons, they go and they move us backwards in time, essentially, and we start all over again, and it doesn't happen the second time around. Is that kind of her theory?
Maybe not change back time. Maybe, like, just interferes right before it can happen.
I don't know.
Something like that.
Well, yeah. You should, next time you see this hippie, ask her, well, if the aliens can go back and change the past, then why didn't they go back and change the past at some point where we were discovering the ability to create nuclear weapons?
Yeah, that's a good point. She was trying to say it was only an end-all thing. They didn't want to interfere with anything else. Because I kind of asked her, well, what about this and this? Why wouldn't they do this? You know, prevent other bad things. But she was just saying, no, they can be able to do it, but they just can't use it. I don't know.
Did she seem like she had some sort of inside information, or was this just a theory?
Inside information? Well,
did she look like she'd been visited by aliens, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, I see. No, I don't know who has that kind of personality. I don't know how you would describe that. She was spacey, but also, like, she was a... what's the word? Where you're coherent with your words, like I'm not right now.
She was well-spoken. Articulate.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Articulate, yeah.
Huh. Well, listen, if you ever run into this girl again at a party at 12:27 a.m. Pacific, I want you to have her call into this program and tell me her theory.
All right. I'll let her know. I'm actually Facebook friends with her, so...
Oh, really? Yeah, please find out more information and fill us in. And ask her that question. Why didn't they go back in time and prevent us from having even the knowledge to create a nuclear weapon?
Oh, I'm sure I wouldn't be able to do the answer justice. So when you, if you get to hear, you'll understand, I guess.
All right. Well, listen, hey, I want to thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. And another thing to chew on, everybody, regarding aliens and all of these conspiracy theories. How many of you out there are aware of the story of these Roswell slides? I have been following this closely, and in fact, when I was in Hawaii, every couple days there was a new article about the Roswell slides up on the Anomalist, anomalist.com. If you go to artbell.com right now, you can see the Roswell alien photo sneak peek. It says, this is a link to an article by Alejandro Rojas of openminds.tv, and he says, last week we wrote about the announcement that photographic slides of an alleged alien taken in 1947 will be revealed on May 5, 2015 in Mexico City at an event presented by Mexican journalist Jaime Maussan. And by the way, I have a cousin named Jaime, not the same guy. However, as part of the announcement, there was a trailer for the upcoming documentary on the slides. And with some manipulation, a screenshot from the trailer may have revealed the actual alleged alien photograph. Documentary trailer is produced by Slidebox Media. Apparently one of the photo analysts that the slides were taken to for verification thought so highly of the slides that he decided to make a documentary about them. However, the trailer may reveal much more than the researchers intended, besides giving a lot of background information regarding slides and the deceased couple who are believed to have been the original owners of it. The trailer also shows a computer rendering of what the alien in the slides might have looked like based off what can be seen in them. In one of these images of the computer rendering, what appears to be the alien in one of the original slides can be seen as the computer graphics are graphed on top of it. And if you go to artbell.com, you can see this photo as well as a link to openminds.tv where you can see the images. As noted here, this is the story of these Roswell slides. This is from a different perspective. Kevin Randall has written this here. Actually, this article, it's on Kevin Randall's site, but this article is written by Anthony Bregaglia, I believe you pronounce his name, and he essentially tells the story here. What some say represents stunning visual evidence of a humanoid creature that was found crashed near Roswell, New Mexico in 1947 will soon be released in an international live stream event, referred to by some as the Roswell Slides. The Kodachrome images have now been authenticated by expert scientists, and their provenance has been confirmed, he says. During that long process, many have speculated about precisely what these pictures show. People will now be able to see for themselves with the public reveal of the slides on May 5, 2015. In the National Auditorium in Mexico City, a number of individuals there. This is a 10,000-seat auditorium. Tom Carey, Don Schmidt, who are very well-known Roswell investigators, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who was the sixth man on the moon, as well as Tom Carey, who claims to have discovered these slides, will all be there for the public reveal. There is a short redux here of the story. Some years ago, an attic was being cleaned out, and a chest was found containing mini Kodachrome slides. And by the way, if you want to read all of this, it is up at kevinrandall.blogspot.com. So head up there and check it out and everything else that Kevin Randall has done. But he says that these two Kodachrome slides were later found to have been separately hidden in an envelope within the inner lining of the chest's lid. The chest and its contents were traced and found to have belonged to an intriguing, childless couple that are now deceased. The author made the discovery that the husband, Bernard A. Ray, was an oil exploration geologist working the fields of New Mexico and the Permian Basin, which includes, it says here, the Roswell region, in the 1940s for a company that would later become part of Texaco. In 1947, he was the president of the Texas chapter of the American Institute of Petroleum Geologists, which also at that time folded in the state of New Mexico. After 1947, Bernard became a ghost in his profession and did not publish nor appear to be active with the Institute ever again. His wife, Hilda Blair Ray, says researchers Tom Carey and Don Schmidt, and the current owner of the film, learned that Hilda was a highly respected lawyer with a high-end clientele and possible intelligence connections, a private pilot. She maintained favorable relations with well-placed individuals in both the public and the private sectors. The other slides are often found depicting accomplished people, Dwight Eisenhower among others, and neither, it says here, would have been the type to hide away hoaxed images as part of a sick prank, only to have those images found decades later by happenstance. The busy professional couple was also philanthropic with no propensity to prank. Now, there is a sentence here at the end of this article by Anthony Bregaglia that I just want to read here because I take issue with it. And I guess we'll find out when these slides are revealed to the public on May 5th, 2015, at the National Auditorium in Mexico City. A lot has been written about them. A lot of analysis of the close-ups of the slides. Some people believe that these are nothing but perhaps deformed children, mummies, perhaps. There are a lot of different theories about what these slides represent. But at the end of this article, Anthony here writes this paragraph. The only conclusion, he says, is that this humanoid is not a deformed person, mummy, dummy, simian, or dead serviceman. It is not a creature that finds its origin on Earth. And given that the slides of this creature were taken the very same year as the Roswell UFO crash, that the appearance of the creature matches the reported appearance of the Roswell crash aliens, and given that the person who was in original possession of the slides was a geologist working in the New Mexico desert throughout the 40s, it is not a jump or a stretch to then conclude that these slides indeed show the corpse of one of the creatures found fallen at Roswell. I don't know about you, but these are two slides. We have no body. We have nothing but two slides. If these slides are revealed, and the detail in them is astonishing, and when you look at it, you say, my God, I have no idea what this is. It looks like nothing of this earth. How in any way is that proof that this was an alien that crashed at Roswell? We don't know anything about this, except that this is an image on slides. I have no idea how you rule out that it could be a deformed person, how it could be a dummy, a simian, or a dead serviceman. We don't have a body on ice. We don't have a body entombed in some sort of embalming liquid. We have nothing. We have nothing but two slides. And earlier in the show, I was talking about the Patterson-Gimlin film of an alleged Bigfoot. I've seen this a million times. I have watched it. I have watched it in slow motion. I have watched it enhanced in numerous ways. And I still believe to this day, I don't know what that thing is. I don't think it's a man in a suit. I think it's something that I can't explain. How has that changed the world? How has that changed anything in the study of Bigfoot? That was 1967. Are we any closer today to proving that Bigfoot exists? And the answer is no, we are not. So even if whatever is on these slides is the Roswell version of the Patterson-Gimlin film, how does that change the world? How does that change ufology really in any way? Except that we've got a great unexplainable photograph. If all we have is the photograph, even if it's dated to the correct year, I don't even know how they claim that these had to be taken at Roswell. Granted, maybe in 1947, this couple was out, and I don't know where they were in the world, and I don't know what they saw, but they took a picture of something. Maybe they were in Antarctica, for all I know. Maybe they were in Hawaii. I don't know where they were. I don't know what they took a photograph of. I don't know how you can prove this has anything to do with Roswell. And, again, if this looks exactly what you and I and everybody else believes that a Roswell alien would look like, what does that prove? Nothing. So I'm very, very interested to see what is revealed on May 5th in the National Auditorium in Mexico City when the whole story of the Roswell slides is slated to come out. I'll be fascinated to see if any mainstream media picks this up, how this story will be covered, if it will even be covered at all, and if anything will change on May 6th, which, by the way, let me see what day May 5th is here. May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, is a Tuesday. So I guess we'll find out, everybody, if our world has changed, if our world has been turned upside down on May 8th. My guess is it won't be. But who knows? To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian, this is Danny Hernandez from Dallas, Texas. How are you?
Danny Hernandez, are you going to Mexico City to see this thing?
No, but it's on a, well, we'll make a little quick joke, because you said May 5th is on a Tuesday. That means Dave Meltzer has to rewrite the whole Observer for that monumental occasion, right?
Hey, you know what? I hadn't thought about that, but he's going to have to rewrite the whole Observer when he gets the news about these aliens. Hey, maybe it's a wrestler on the slides. Who knows?
That's it. Yeah, yeah. But I want to comment on the couple of things you talked about with Brian Kendrick. A lot of it about literature. I'm currently I'm a university here in Texas, in Dallas, and I'm taking world literature. And one thing I always wanted to get your opinion on is, I don't know, have you ever read the Epic of Gilgamesh? Or are you familiar with this Epic of the Babylon?
I did read that many, many years ago. I'm an old man now, so.
Yes, well, it is a very old story, so hopefully. But there are a couple of things.
I didn't read the first edition, if that's what you're asking. I'm not quite that old.
But basically, one of the big things that Tom talked about is about the flood, like how this character, Gilgamesh, like the story of the flood and how similar it is to like the one in Noah and other stories. So basically, like we can conclude that, like, even though, like, maybe what the Bible said or New Testament, like, it maybe not, might not have been Noah, but this event, like, of the flood, of killing all these creatures, is conclusive that probably could have happened. And basically, because, you know, how back in the day, all the stories were told by word of mouth, basically, whatever that event was, but the flood actually happened. So one thought on that, and also, like,
well, let me start there real quick, and then we'll get into the second one here. I have absolutely no doubt that there was some sort of flooding event. Now, do I believe that the entire world was covered in water for 40 days and 40 nights it rained? I don't know if that is exactly. In fact, I highly doubt that that's the way that it went down. But let's think about this for a second. There was an ice age, and a large portion of North America was covered in ice. And then came the melting of the ice. And so I'm sure that there are a lot of places about 10, 12,000 years ago, where all of a sudden, holy smokes, the great flood is upon us. I mean, it probably didn't all happen at once, but I'm sure that the melting of the way that things changed when the Ice Age ended, and I'm sure dramatic, drastic local flooding as well. I'm sure it happened all over. And stories grow in the retelling, and the next thing you know, it's a giant flood that engulfed the entire Earth. You gotta remember that you and I, and Brian Kendrick, have a great idea of what's going on here in the world. You know, I live here in Washington. I know all about this terrible, terrible weather over there on the East Coast. We're well aware of everything that goes on in our world, for the most part. I mean, there's still things we don't know about. But imagine a time 12,000 years ago where all you knew was your area. And to you, your little area, your village, the area you lived in, that was the entire world. You didn't know anything else. And so if your world flooded, yes, the waters covered the entire Earth from your perspective.
Damn it. And also, I recommend that if you haven't read it, people will read it. And it's like a good part about how Gilgamesh, like the area, like the Middle East, how it's all desert. It makes a pretty logical thing, like, because it used to be full of cedar trees. He cut them all down. So it's because of that guy. That's why the Middle East is all deserty. But I want to talk about the second thing you talked about with Brian Kendrick is about the hollow moon. And, like, I think it's fact. I think I've probably seen in books that when the moon landing happened, when it touched down, like they said, NASA got like a vibe that it made like a vibration or something like that. So
it rang for 2 hours.
Right, correct. What about the dark side of the moon? Like, And nobody ever talks about that. Like we have the Hubble up there or all these satellites, and like we don't even have that thing mapped out, the dark side, you know?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. If you head up right now, first off, did you hear the show we did on the Hollow Moon a couple of weeks ago?
No, I haven't.
You got to go up and listen to that one. We spent an hour talking about the theory of the Hollow Moon, so I would definitely listen to that one. But if you go up to artbell.com right now, there is an article here. NASA has, in fact, unveiled new video of the dark side of the moon. So you can go up there and check that out, and then maybe you can make whatever conclusions you're going to make about that.
All right. And then one last thing is that can I put a request for your producer?
Sure.
To see if y'all can, because here in Texas, like in 2008, we had the Stephenville UFO sighting, and like how, like you can find like on YouTube for like Stephenville, Texas. It's like right outside of Dallas. You had like Fox News talking about how people in this country town all saw like lights in the sky, and it got a lot of coverage in 2008. I was thinking you can get like an Arthur or somebody covenant from that event. The Stephenville UFO 2008.
Stephenville in 2008. I will get right on that. And I want to thank you so much for the call here today. Make sure you head up to the website and you can download the show Talking the Hollow Moon. But go up and do it right now, because it's going to be gone in about 45 minutes. So thank you very much for that call right there. What do we got on Twitter here? This is from Alex here. He says the BK School of PW interview, that's Brian Kendrick, was awesome. It was the best, he says. I can't stop reading about the hexagon on Saturn. Hey, there's plenty of reading material about that one right there. Also, Steven says, Brian, this is the pic you were looking for a year ago, and he has sent three photographs here of the supposed Thunderbird, the legendary Thunderbird photo. Some old photographs of pterodactyls, flying creatures that, according to science, disappeared 150 million years ago. Here we see them portrayed as hunting trophies. These are, in fact, not the photographs. The image that is in my brain and in the brains of everybody else who believes that they have seen this photograph is nowhere to be seen on the internet. So if you find something online, that's not it. I've seen all of them online, as have many, and none of them match up to what we believe we saw. And yes, I said we believe, but we may not really believe. Does that make any sense? Doesn't make any sense to me either. I mentioned many months ago, I read a very, very interesting article, I can't remember where it was, about the Thunderbird photo, and a theory that there was a Guinness Book of World Records where a large bird was found, and there is a couple of individuals actually holding it up by the wings. And this was in millions of editions of the Guinness Book of World Records, which during the late 60s, early 70s, everybody read. Everybody had a copy of the Guinness Book of World Records. And the photograph in there is not the Thunderbird photograph, but the bird in the photograph looks exactly like what everybody imagines they think they saw nailed to the side of that building. And so there is a theory that somebody, I don't know if they made up the story or if they read the tombstone epitaph or whatever the deal was, but they got an image in their head of all of these men underneath this pterodactyl nailed to the side of a building. And when you close your eyes, it's very easy to imagine something like this. And if you had been reading the Guinness Book of World Records and you saw that photograph of that bird, you could very easily put these things together into an image that would be burned into your brain, and you would think for sure that you saw it somewhere, because you did, in the Guinness Book of World Records. But you didn't see what is in your brain right now, and so you're always looking for that book where you saw this image from the early 70s, which doesn't exist. but your brain has created it based on some other images that it has put together. So that's the best theory I've ever heard in terms of the alleged Thunderbird photograph. But no, that is not the image that most people have in their brains. Once again, everybody, if you want to give us a call, we got a couple of minutes left, 855-478-4478. And don't forget to check out the website, AfterDarkRadioShow.com. If you missed any of this show tonight, it's going to be up there tomorrow, so check that out. More conspiracies here. Jason says, Brian, what do you think of the conspiracy theory that AIDS is a man-made disease? Those in the scientific community generally believe HIV originated from a strain of simian immunodeficiency virus found in Western African monkeys. But when a group of 500 African Americans were surveyed in a 2005 study published in the Journal of Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome, over half of them said that AIDS was created by the government. Conspiracy theories about why the government might have created the virus range from population control to the weakening of racial minority groups and gay people. Some also say that there's a cure for AIDS being held back by the government for similar reasons. I don't believe either of these, and I'll tell you why. Number one, I don't take the word of people who have an opinion about something. Who knows where anybody heard any of these stories? I mean, you can trace back. You can go backwards from today to the very, very beginnings of the AIDS virus, and you can follow the chain, and the most likely scenario to me is the theory that is espoused nowadays. And if I had any proof, if I had ever read anything good proving otherwise, I haven't. Let's just put it that way. There's conspiracy theories about everything. There are a million reasons why one would come up with a conspiracy. This one here about the government maybe creating it to for population control. There's plenty of ways. Think about this. If you want to create a virus that is going to control the population, the virus would not be something that it gets into your body and it takes a while to kick in, and then it kills you over a long period of time in which you have symptoms. I mean, yes, many millions of people have gotten AIDS, but if you wanted to really wipe out a population, you would create a disease that is going to wipe you out very, very quickly, highly contagious. It's going to wipe you out in a matter of days. It incubates for a period of time where you're highly contagious, but you don't show any symptoms. This is why Ebola is so frightening. You get it, and it's a horrible disease, and you're dead quickly. If you're going to create a virus to control the population, it would seem to me that that would be the kind of virus you would want to create, as opposed to something that kills in the way that AIDS does. I'm not the best person to speak on this, but suffice to say, I think there are better, horrible diseases that can be created if you want to control the population. And not to say at all that AIDS is not a horrible disease, but there are many, many horrible, horrible diseases that could be created if the government really wanted to control the population. Also, have you heard the conspiracy theory that Shakespeare didn't write all those plays, and that Shakespeare was just a pen name used by a group of writers, which might explain why his signature varied throughout his career? Others think that he did exist, but that he was simply a figure for another person to write plays through. The main argument against Shakespeare is the fact that he was uneducated, which seems rather elitist. Guess who else is uneducated? Me! 2 years of community college, that was it. And I managed to write a book and do a radio show, so I don't buy that one. And as far as, I mean, there are certainly people that Shakespeare is a mysterious person. I don't know if I buy the best evidence being that he had a weird signature throughout his career. If you want to go and collect all the signatures that I've signed in 9 million places throughout my lifetime, you'd probably think that I was 15 different people as well and I didn't exist. So this one at least seems to have a little bit of evidence behind it, but very interesting nonetheless. So that right there is from Jason. Couple of last news stories here very quickly. I want to mention a few from the AfterDarkRadioShow.com Facebook page. If you go to facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow, you can check this out. Unsolved Mysteries and Scary Stuff, The Kendrick Theory. It is a link up at culturecrossfire.com, linked up at the Facebook page for After Dark Radio Show. If you want to check out Brian Kendrick, a trailer for a video on High Spots where he talks about nothing but the Illuminati, the Skull and Bones, 9/11. You can head up there and check out that trailer. And if you want to grab that video, it is up at highspots.com. So check that out. Also, we hear from Live Science, linked up on our Facebook page. Do Einstein's laws prove ghosts exist? Every night, amateur ghost hunting groups cross country head out into abandoned warehouses, old buildings, etc. Like me. Recent Google search turned up nearly 8 million results suggesting a link between ghosts and Einstein's work covering the conservation of energy. Assertion is repeated by many top experts in the field, including ghost researcher John Kachuba in his book Ghostbusters. Einstein proved that all the energy of the universe is constant. It can be neither created nor destroyed. So what happens to that energy when we die? If it cannot be destroyed, it must then, according to Einstein, be transformed into another form of energy. What is this new energy? Could we call that new creation a ghost? The answer, however, says according to Live Science, it's not ghosts. After a person dies, it says, the energy in his or her body goes where all organisms' energy goes after death, into the environment. When a human dies, the energy stored in his or her body is released in the form of heat and transferred into the animals that eat us, i.e. wild animals if we are left unburied, or worms and bacteria if we were interred. And the plants that absorb us, if we are cremated, the energy in our bodies is released in the form of heat and light. So, no, Einstein apparently did not prove the existence of ghosts. Everybody, it's time to wrap the show up. I want to thank you all for listening. As always, head up to all of the websites, including AfterDarkRadioShow.com, which has links to all of our different places, our stream, our 24/7 stream, the download of this show, the Facebook page, run by the great Andrew Lutsky, Facebook.com/AfterDarkRadioShow, and of course, ArtBell.com. The host website of the Dark Matter Radio Network. Head up there and check that one out. We're going to be back next week with a brand new show. We're here every Friday night. If you're listening on Saturday, Friday night at 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern. Replaying on Saturday on the Dark Matter Radio Network. And of course, make sure you check out ArtBell.com and the Dark Matter Radio Network as we await the return of Art Bell. You can check out all of the great shows on the Dark Matter Radio Network. And there's a lot of great ones. So check it out at the Dark Matter Radio Network official website, which is artbell.com. And with that, everybody, we are out of here. Again, we'll talk to you next week. I want to thank you all for listening. Our illustrious webmaster, Keith Roll, and the great Art Bell, and all of you listeners as well. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again next week. After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Broadcasting Network.
Such a winsome